Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Dragoncast. Home of House of the Dragon. Gather your small council, send out your ravens and call in your bannermen. I'm Hand of the King, Jamie East, here to guide you through the insane world of Westeros and beyond. Hey, 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 everybody. Welcome to Dragoncast, home of House of the Dragon. Well, it's the home of many things. We've just opened our doors and allowed everything to kind of swarm in uninvited. I'm Jamie East.
And I'm Chris Mandel.
So, in this episode, season 6, episode 10, season finale, one of the best season finales, possibly, that's what we're here to talk about, The Winds of Winter. Chris, the best season finale?
I think it's one of the most successful, satisfying, action-packed, well-directed, and so on and so forth.
I think most Game of Thrones season finales are usually victims of fantastic season episode nines. They chose that episode nine as the real quiz kind of thing, and episodes tens were all usually kind of precursors for season setup, moving people around, getting people offering us hints at where people are heading towards for next season. Blah 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 blah. Arya heading to Braavos, that kind of thing, Danny kind of like flying off. This one felt like it had a lot more substance in it. But we're going to nip now and go to Previously On for 5 minutes to get a recap of what happened in season 6, episode 10, The Winds of Winter, back in 2 ticks.
We begin with Loras Tyrell's trial by the Faith Militant in the Great Sept of Baelor. Loras confesses to sleeping with men, including Renly Baratheon. He gives up his family name and titles and is allowed to join the Faith. Tommen tries to leave his chamber to attend the trial, but is stopped by the Mountain. Elsewhere in the castle, Qyburn lures Grand Maester Pycelle to his lab and has a group of children stab him to death. Cersei's trial is due after Loras's, but she remains in her chamber. The High Sparrow orders Lancel to bring Cersei to the Sept. As he leaves, Lancel notices a young boy creeping around, so follows him to a dungeon. The boy stabs Lancel, leaving him unable to walk. Margaery realises all of Cersei's enemies are assembled in one room and tries to tell the High Sparrow that something is very wrong. Lancel drags himself towards a light at the end of the chamber and finds an enormous wildfire cachet, rigged to explode at any second. Cersei's plan becomes immediately apparent. Margaery tries to leave the Sept with her brother, but the Faith Militant block the doors. Before Lancel can extinguish the flame, the wildfire explodes, engulfing the Sept in flames and incinerating everyone inside. Cersei smiles as she watches the building collapse. Later, she wreaks revenge on Septa Runella, the woman who tormented her during her imprisonment by the Faith. Cersei tells her that she intends to torture her for a very, very long time, before letting the Mountain into her cell to have his way. Unbeknownst to Cersei, Tommen is so horrified by the explosion at the Sept and the death of his wife that he throws himself from the window of his chambers. King's Landing is once more monarchless. In a quieter corner of Westeros, Sam and Gilly arrive at the Citadel, and Sam is granted permission to use the library while he waits to meet the Archmaester. At Winterfell, Davos confronts Melisandre with Shireen's wooden stag, which he found in the ashes of her pyre. Melisandre admits to the sacrifice, conceding it was wrong as Stannis was defeated anyway. Davos asks Jon to execute Melisandre, but she points out how useful she'll be in the war to come, and instead is exiled south. Later, Sansa apologises to Jon for not telling him about the Knights of the Vale, and they resolve to trust each other from now on. She also tells him a white raven has arrived from the Citadel, signalling winter is finally here. In Dawn, Olenna Tyrell meets with Ilaria and the Sand Snakes. She's looking for revenge against Cersei for murdering her family. At the meeting, Varys suggests Olenna allies with Daenerys Targaryen. Daenerys tells Dario she needs him to stay in Meereen while she invades Westeros, as she may need to make an alliance through marriage. Dario protests, but ultimately agrees. Tyrion admits to Daenerys he's overcome his cynicism and now truly believes in her cause. To his delight, Daenerys names Tyrion the Hand of the Queen. At the Twins, a handmaiden serves Walder Frey some pie as he waits for his sons to arrive at dinner. The servant tells him he's actually eating his own sons before peeling her face back and revealing herself to be Arya. Walder tries to run, but Arya slits his throat, finally avenging her mother and brother for the Red Wedding. Back in Winterfell, Sansa is visited by Littlefinger, who says he wants to sit on the Iron Throne with her at his side. Sansa leaves without accepting or rejecting his offer. Benjen says goodbye to Bran and Meera, as the wall's magic doesn't allow the dead to pass through it. After Benjen leaves, Bran touches a weirwood tree and sees a vision of his father as a young man. Pay attention now, people. Ned is back outside the Tower of Joy and hears his sister Lyanna screaming inside. He finds her dying in bed after giving birth to a baby boy. Lyanna whispers something to Ned that Bran can't hear. What she tells him is that Robert Baratheon will kill the baby if he finds out he exists, and makes Ned promise to protect her son. It's revealed that Lyanna's baby is none other than Jon Snow. The adult Jon Snow, who we now know is Targaryen with a strong claim to the Iron Throne even if he doesn't, meets with the Northern Lords and the Wildlings and urges them to stand united against the White Walkers. Lyanna Mormont shames the Northern Lords for failing to come to Jon's aid and pledges her allegiance. The other Lords follow suit and Jon is declared King in the North. Sansa looks at Littlefinger, who is watching from the shadows nearby. Jaime and Bronn approach King's Landing and see smoke coming from the Sept, arriving just in time to see Cersei crowned Queen of Westeros with Qyburn as her hand. The episode, and indeed the season, ends with the moment we've all been waiting for. Daenerys' armada, now made up of Dothraki, Unsullied, the Greyjoys, the Dornish and the Tyrells, finally leave for Westeros. On the deck of her ship, Daenerys smiles as she sets out to reclaim the Iron Throne.
Came off the back of the Battle of the Bastards, continued with Miguel Sapochnik directing it, and possibly one of the greatest. I mean, how long was it gone?
16 for? Minutes. Sixteen
minutes of barely a word uttered, like maybe four or five sentences.
All the music is doing all the work, really, to sort of communicate the tension, the sort of escalating threat. Really beautiful
music, really well put together. The editing on it was great. I think this is the first time we've actually seen Tommen.
Yeah he's been quite absent, hasn't he? And I think, you know, that's the kind of king he's been since he's sort of taken over. But yeah, we haven't seen him.
I don't think we've seen
him
at all. I mean, to give a bit of backstory to him. So he's been king since Joffrey's death.
Season 4, yeah.
And has been under the spell of Margaery, but also torn between his kind of lust for Margaery and doing right by his old dear mam. And it all goes tits. I mean, I loved his death scene because it was just so unexpected. And
I think it's like, I mean, we've not seen the episodes in which he is in, and from what I remember, it's a lot of it is him. He's not Joffrey. He's quite mild mannered, quite agreeable.
Yeah.
He sort of turns on Cersei a little bit. She's not able to control him either, but for different reasons. But yeah, I mean, it was amazing. It was amazing because it was quite unexpected, I thought. And it was sort of the whole point of Cersei's plan to blow up the Sept of Baelor was to eradicate her enemies. And she also caused her son's suicide. You know, she's sort of, it's such a, I sort of mentioned this in our Succession recording, a mutually assured destruction. You know, she's wiped out her enemies, but she's also got rid of her son. So yeah, it's so sudden and so kind of shocking.
Yeah.
He just loved his wife that much. Like, fair play to him. He's a good boy.
What a scene though. The candles in the wildfire, mm-hmm. Loras kind of like crawling along.
That's Lancel.
Oh, sorry, beg your pardon. Sorry, yeah. Joseph, sorry.
Cersei's cousin who she was fucking for a while.
Yes, correct.
But yes.
That we saw Maester Pycelle bit the bullet. With
stabbed to death by children.
Death by...
And not before punching one of them, which I was a bit like...
Did he? I missed that bit.
He wallops one of them. And I was like...
Take you down with me. Yeah.
I didn't know you could punch children on television. I thought there were sort of union rules against this sort of thing. Because it's quite a...
It's a hefty wallop.
Yeah. So he gets murdered just to stop him interfering, right? Because...
Well, I think he got a tip off. Well, actually, I think he got some kind of tip off about what was going on and was excited I think he was excited to see the back of Cersei, wasn't he? That was the thing.
But yeah.
He was just...
The whole thing, though, is really... You know, I sort of don't like it, and I will criticise the show when it doesn't let us into the heads of people that do things right, because it's just quite annoying when you don't know why anything's happening. But they sort of use it to their advantage, because we don't know... I mean, it's implied that she's going to do this, but it's quite... It's a bit like Home Alone with, like, all these lead-ups to it.
Yeah.
All these little pieces of the puzzle. And it's sort of more thrilling not knowing. When sort of Marjorie sort of says she is not planning to be at her trial, she is not intending to suffer the consequences, you're like,
yeah.
Oh shit, she's just like wired the whole place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's really thrilling.
It's great. And also, you know, I think Jonathan Pryce's stubbornness and kind of blind faith in the Seven was perfect for that because...
Yeah.
He was just like, don't be ridiculous. You know, there was the...
Yeah.
So kind of arrogant and so kind of cocky.
Just hadn't envisaged a world
in which he loses.
Someone was incapable of being brought to heel by, you know, organized religion, which is, you know, a lot of people on this show, that is their downfall, is they think,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, 100%.
God's going to come and smite you.
Well, it's a conversation, like, well, which is a conversation that happens later on the episode with Marcella... with Melisandre and Jon Snow and Davos. Great. Cersei's costume in this episode
so good.
Was just fucking beautiful. Do you know the little kind of scales or they had the sigils like minutely kind of embossed on? It was just, it's the most, I saw that costume. It's in fucking insane. A new crown for her at the end. She didn't take the Baratheon crown.
No. And also, you know, I think a lot... What I would say about this point in the show, you know, it's a very different show to the one we started watching, right?
Mm.
But what is improved vastly, costuming, music, direction, camera work, everything. And I think everyone in this looks amazing. Cersei's new outfit is a... gown, and it has also got armor kind of built into it, and there's a real there's actually no reds or golds from the Lannisters. It's black, it's silver, and I think they communicate so much about where she is. She's sort of this impenetrable, like, you know, figure.
Well, that's what, when people go, oh, how can you spend so much money on a TV show, it's like, that's how you spend that much money. That's why a budget can go from like 3 million to 8 million per episode or whatever it was, because you're right, it's the costuming. And you know, that costume would have cost tens of thousands of pounds.
I'd love to know more about the crown, because it's unusually minimalist for her
and quite bejeweled as well. It was quite dainty.
I thought it would
maybe
be kind of,
if anyone's listening,
Maybe we'll try and find some interviews about it. But I know when Sansa started wearing her, like, quite ugly jewellery, they were like, oh, she's got this big long chain because it's, like, her version of Needle the Sword or whatever. And, you know, there's a lot going into it. So, yeah, I thought the first sort of 15, 16 minutes were amazing. Just this tense, slow build. And then there's this, like, blockbuster-sized explosion that rips apart the Sept and a good portion of the city.
She just destroyed thousands of people there. It was a proper. Yeah. It was an act of terrorism. You know, yeah. There's no other way around it.
My only sort of feeling is, if I was to be kind of negative about it, is that the show doesn't have the capacity to really go into that a great deal. Like, the Red Wedding sort of carries on. The remnants of that go on for years, and we don't really see any sort of, not just blowback. Obviously, the Tyrells.
Yeah,
ally with the Martell, like, you know, fine. But
it's like,
we don't
it's a bit like Marvel. It's like the Avengers, which actually the DC universe did try and start to address at one point, which was just like, you can't destroy all these fucking skyscrapers and kill all these innocent bystanders of your wars. You know, exactly like, you know, there are consequences. But yes, you're right.
What I've found watching it sort of in bits and pieces for this rewatch is that it's just so satisfying because there's just lots of big moments. You know, we're getting to see the big blockbuster bits and it's really good on a rewatch. Whereas I think some of the stuff that's not been as effective on a rewatch is a random episode from season two because they're slower, they're a little bit less cinematic. So it was great. I mean, the whole thing's really good. There's just so many boxes getting ticked off and a real conclusiveness to, like, pretty much every story. Let's go through. So we've got the blowing everything up, smashing apart. Yeah. Marjorie dies, Mace Tyrell dies, Loras dies, the High Sparrow dies, Tommen dies. Yeah. Scepter, the Shame Nun.
She's left to be the toy of Sir Gregor. How long do you think she lasted? I mean,
It's implied.
A long time?
Yeah, I don't know.
It wouldn't be unreasonable to expect that she was still alive at the Long Night, in some way, shape, or form. It's not that far away. But
grim.
So then we went from that over to more satisfying deaths. To the Freys and the Lannisters. I'd forgotten the sequence of events. I thought this happened either as an opener of an episode or as a...
Well, you're half right, because in the opening of season 7, she kills the rest of House Frey. She poisons them.
Right.
So I actually think this might have been filmed... The thing that starts season 7 might have been filmed for this episode and they moved it over because... Yeah, but you know, I'm sure it was in an episode in our rewatch, but there is a famous story about the rat cook, which Bran tells Mira and Hodor and Rickon and Jojen when they're travelling. Maybe we missed it. Do you remember this?
Yeah, no.
It's an old fable about a cook... There's a long, 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 long time ago in the sort of history books, this king visits a village and the cook kills his son and bakes him into a pie and feeds the king's son to the king. And the king finds out, says, this is the best pie I've ever had, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, that was your son. The son's done something to piss him off. Bran doesn't remember when he's telling the story. Yeah. And the cook gets cursed from the gods for, like, being so violating the house guest rules, you know, like all the stuff about the Red Wedding, violating.
The gods are so up on that. It's like, you've not taken your
shoes
off.
Didn't brush your feet. Yeah. Didn't say please and thank you. So the cook is turned into a giant rat and has to feast on his own rat children to survive. And he runs around the castles.
I missed it. It's used
in an episode of season 3 to explain guest right, so that you understand when the Red Wedding happens how gross a violation that is of civil behaviour in this society.
Right.
Okay. And I can't remember which castle, but it is long ago. Bran doesn't remember all the finer details, but Arya doing that is a sort of reflection on that. She kills off screen the two Freys that killed Catelyn and Rob's partner Talisa. And those are the two Freys in the pie. It's gross, nice. Isn't it?
Yeah, love that tied together. Thank you very much for that.
It's very good. It's very good. The other thing, I tell you what I would say, though. I'm a stickler for detail. Mm-hmm. I thought it looked like a really good pie. Nicely minced beef, person, whatever. And
you
there's
noticed the fingertip.
Thumb. Yeah. A thumb sticking out. So she must have just put that in as a garnish, right?
Must have been. Yeah, just a kind of like bit of gristle, just to chew on, maybe. She's an assassin and a cook as well, because you're right, it was a very nice pie.
So she must have killed them, butchered the meat, gone to the kitchen, found a pot.
Swapped the meat out? Maybe she just swapped the meat out.
Oh, maybe they were already... Yeah, because I was going to say she'd think, oh, I've got
she's
any
like, ER, cook, here's your meat you ordered. Ignore the fam. There you go.
Alice was putting masks on as every member of the kitchen...
Now I've got to put someone on from the cash and carry now.
Got to go and get a bay leaf. the pastry. I have to go and get the pre-rolled stuff. But I love that, though. It's really satisfying.
Satisfying. And also interesting, if you go back and watch it, you'll see that she was the wench, the barmaid, that Jaime Lannister and Bronn were talking about at the beginning. And Bronn was like... They only have to fucking look at you to want to fuck you. And they look at who we now know was Arya. And he's like, I don't think she wasn't. Actually, clearly she wasn't. She was looking at you going, you're fucking Jaime Lannister. You're a monster.
Oh, I didn't catch that. So why didn't she kill Jaime when she had the chance?
Well, because because she's an assassin. She would have been killed herself had she done that.
Yeah. Also, he's not on her list.
Is he not? Oh, I thought Jaime Lannister was on a list. Well, maybe not.
I don't think he is. I would.
Well, he pushed Bran out the window. I thought he would have.
I don't think she knows that.
Okay. Yeah, you're probably right.
Anyway, amazing scene, and season 7. She opens. She bins off the whole of House Frey. I didn't remember that scene with Jaime and Walder. That was sort of new to me about. Yeah, you're in power, but we put you there and everyone hates you and they don't fear you, they fear us.
Quite mirrored Succession, the end scene of the Succession episode we've just done as well. It's like, don't get cocky, pal. You're a cunt.
Yeah.
And you're not really in, but you're only in power because we're allowed.
You're not successful people, House Frey.
You're not serious people, Walder Frey.
Serious people, sorry. You're not serious people. They're not.
We then cut back to Cersei seeing Tom and lying dead. She didn't want him buried like with Joffrey in the mausoleum or the not mausoleum or the kind of tomb or whatever it is they have. She asked for him to be burned and scatter his ashes where the sept once stood, which I just thought was quite a weird thing. I don't know why.
She just invented cremation, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but like, why?
Yeah.
I sort of wondered if it was out of like not being able to look at his body because of what she did.
Maybe. Yeah, I just found it very strange. Or maybe
has she? Do you think it's because his face was so broken in that it was just like
ravaged? Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought that was a weird detail. I don't really understand the significance of that.
And then we cut to Braavos to catch up, and Gilly and Sam and little Sam of
they are at Old Town.
At Old Town, sorry, not Braavos.
Which is where Alicent and Otto Hightower are from.
Ah.
That's why their sigil is the tower.
I don't know why I said it was Braavos. Maybe.
Well, they do. I think I told you that in the book, at least, they sort of go via Braavos. Okay. But I don't know if they did on the show.
Yeah.
But
Gilly's got hold of some Australian miracle conditioner, leave-in conditioner.
Some box dye by the looks of things. I know. Nice chestnut colour.
I know. A bit of a glow-up for old Gilly. A sidebar. How does Gilly hold that child? She just like carries it as if she's never seen him before. Like, you know, like...
She holds him like a sack of spuds.
Exactly.
Have they not, you know... They have, like, you know, they invent wheelchairs on this show at some point, and no one's invented any kind of basket for a child.
Exactly.
I get thinking, you haven't even got... Yeah, it's so weird.
And Sam gets his big, like, Lork's a lordy, Gov, moment when he sees how vast and incredible the library is.
Yeah, big old library. With the gold bands in the sort of... I don't know what you'd call it, the centrepiece of the library. It looks very similar to me to the intro, where you've got the, you know, the sun and the I think the implication is that the Song of Ice and Fire is...
It's all work, yeah.
This is all in the books.
Good, yeah, good piece there. I enjoyed, it was quite Da Vinci. It was like, I liked like the mirror, the way that they'd use the sunlight and the mirrors to be able to like point towards different, you know, it's like, there's no electric lights there, but if you pull 28 winches, we can get it over to that chair there. If you
and the sit. Woman who run, the woman who is the librarian has Popeye arms from just constantly moving the windows.
You want to read that? Come back. Give us 2 hours.
There was a theory that I'm really glad didn't come to fruition, where the series would end with Sam writing the book that became the show. And everyone was like, please.
I'll tell you what we'll do now. Take a quick break.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm going to tell you what we do now. We're going to start the episode again. Welcome back to Dragoncast, Season 6, Episode 10, Winds of Winter. And back to Winterfell.
Mm-hmm.
For a really good...
loved all of that
section. I thought Melisandre kind of got rumbled and exiled. Liam Cunningham was great in this. You know, his pent up fury with Melisandre was great. You know, with the stag, just go on, tell him what you did. And I just thought the whole thing. You know, you touched upon organized religion at the beginning with the death of the High Sparrow, the faith of the Seven, and this was like a really kind of like Gossamer thinly veiled attack on just most religions.
Yeah,
it was pretty.
I mean, apparently George is like very anti-religion, very sort of like,
yeah,
you know, he blames a lot of problems on it, and it's clear that like Davos has come to really embody that. Like, you can't just burn a child alive, especially because Melisandre said, "Oh, well, it sort of helped," and it's like, well, it sort of didn't really. did it?
No, exactly. There was no real consequence to Shireen or Stannis or anything. She made the point, was just like, you know, your fucking god was wrong, you bullshit, you believe in this nonsense. And she was just like, hang on a sec, we are standing here because of him. You know, It was that god, you know, which is, I always find interesting, because, you know, they talk about your fucking god, you believe in this, it was bullshit. It's just, it's like, yeah, but we've actually seen a man be brought to life.
Yeah.
We've seen several men be brought back to life because of that god. We have to take that god as canon. That actually it's the only god out of all of the gods that are believed in, whether it's the fucking weirwood, whether it's the, you know, all of those ones. This is the only one that we've seen any proof.
Conclusive
evidence of that there is a supernatural force at work.
I do think that is something that, like, yeah, I mean, John comes back, couldn't tell you how, because we didn't watch it again. But, you know, everyone just kind of no one's really going, okay, how did that happen?
Yeah.
You know, because, we haven't got time, right? But there's a bit in next season that I remember really clearly where Davos says to Daenerys, he took a knife to the heart.
Yeah.
And she's like, what did he mean by that? And he's just like, oh, it would have turned a phrase.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because they're just a bit like, well, what does it mean to engage with this? Like, you know, anyway.
Yeah. No, I remember that. Yeah.
Winterfell gang is sort of getting used to the... John's like, oh, God, when I used to have feasts here, I had to sit at the back. And Melisandre's like, I was enslaved, so...
Yeah, get over it.
Boo
yeah.
fucking who.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, she gets sent away. Obviously, we know she comes back in season 8, before the long night. She does pop up. There's quite a lot of, like, people getting sent away.
I'd misremembered. I thought that... that she left, this was the one that she took off her necklace and collapsed into the snow, but that was after the long night. That was at the end.
She lights up loads of torches in the long night, and then they get put out after about 30 seconds. She's like, well, my job's done.
That's right.
It's an amazing, you know, this whole army, that their swords light up or something.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, wow, and then the White Walkers are just like, I think the fuck not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shut the door. I really like all of the stuff in Winterfell. There's a lot of just a lot of complications with, as Littlefinger points out, you know, a bastard born in the south, seemingly being elected over Sansa, who's got a better claim and all that sort of thing.
But he's just trying to stir.
He's definitely
trying to shit stir. He knows his people are running out of fucks to give about him, and he kind of almost seals his fate in his conversation with Sansa this time around, doesn't he? He's kind of like, I think his cards are marked, like, completely. John says to her, do you trust him? She's like, only a fool would trust Littlefinger.
Yeah, I think it's sort of, especially from rewatching it, it's like, it's permanent. The Bolton thing permanently fucked up their relationship. She was sort of like, she did trust him for a while, but now she kind of doesn't need to because she's got other people in her corner. Mm. Oh, I'll tell you who we didn't see in this episode. We didn't see Brienne.
No, we didn't actually, did we? Or Podrick.
They sort of set up the tension for next season as between Jon and Sansa, but obviously, as we know, he goes to try and woo Daenerys, and it's actually Sansa and Arya that are the season 7. You know, they sort of freak each other out quite a bit, don't they?
They meet the other side of puberty and just don't understand each other whatsoever, do they? Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of, yeah. So, but anyway, I thought it was really good up there setting everything up. The speech about electing John and that maybe they can be a separate kingdom. Because, you know, the North is like bigger than all the other ones.
Yeah, and like, we got...
combined, you know, it's massive.
Lady Mormont kind of turned it all around, didn't she?
Oh, she's so good. Bella Ramsey,
forgot how good she was. I mean, she...
just charming.
Yeah, just electrifying. It's like really just a real scene stealer, which was difficult because it was a great scene anyway. They were really good. And also, I love the fact that Darling from Blackadder is this kind of like gruff-voiced... You know,
he's one of the... It's not the Glovers. It's there's Manderly. House Manderly, is it?
Yeah.
Be descended from.
It's like, fuck them. It's like, to anyone that doesn't know, he's a brilliant actor called... Excuse me while I Google. It's been in so many things, like usually kind of like Tim McKinney is his name. He's usually appears in like Richard Curtis things. He was in like Four Weddings and Blackadder and stuff like that. Usually character actor that is quite, I'm going to use the word sissy, because that was the kind of role it would always be cast as in the 80s. He was always like,
yeah, kind of campy.
Yeah. The sissy one in the group. And so it was really nice to see him. This like, fucking get in there, lads. Proper banter-esque kind of.
Yeah. Blank. I couldn't remember his name, but I was like, I'm sure that's the guy from Blackadder.
Yeah, Captain Don.
And he was in that 10%, the remake of Call My Agent.
Oh, I didn't see that. Was it any good?
I thought it was terrible.
Right, okay. The French one is fucking brilliant.
Yeah. We were going to actually start watching it. Rob is more fond of it than I was. I thought it didn't make sense. I thought it didn't translate well.
No.
I think it's like just, because it's the guys from like W1A in 2012, like it's just not as good as those. No. And I think those are amazing. Okay. Anyway,
digress. So, we're back into the second to Westeros. I forgot the significance of the White Raven. That we saw like a glimpse of a White Raven leaving the Citadel or arriving...
From Old Town, they send them all out. They send a flock of them. And then that's a beautiful tracking shot where we watch one fly to Winterfell. Mm. And it's so understood they only send them when winter arrives that they don't even have to write a note.
It's just like, I love stuff like that, but it's also the practicalities of that, you know, they've been waiting for winter for how long?
I know.
That must be like the fifth generation of White Raven that they're desperately having to be kind of like interbreeding to make sure that they've got enough White Ravens to go round. Practicalities. What an admin nightmare.
They've got one wing bigger than the other because they've been bred with their own siblings.
And also, it's a bit grounded. It's a bit like Huxtable Phil, kind of like Groundhog Day kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's like... Is it a bit like, you know, in England when it's a white Christmas if a flake of snow lands on Heathrow Airport or something like that? How do they, what's the judge of like winter?
Well, I think that's what's, another thing that is they just hasn't been explored in the books or the show is that the seasons are not the same length and that some children grow up for their whole life just in winter.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, when they say, I mean, they do avoid it, but when a character will say like, you know, how long has it been? It's like, well, how do you measure time? Because you can't do years because you've, you know, winters last for like seasons. 60 years.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's
and
it's
also not enough children are going, Dad, what the fuck is winter? What is winter?
What is SPF 30? I don't have it where I'm from. But the Citadel and the Maesters understand weather, but they don't really explain it to anyone else. And there's all kinds of like deep dives about why. Yeah, but there's a theory that the magic has caused the seasons to kind of fuck up slightly. So anyway, so winter is apparently coming, which we won't see on the show really, because you know they can't have just snow everywhere.
Theory about that is that I think it was a vision. I think it was winter when they all thought that like winter was the Night King and it was going to be this, it was going to be that, it was going to be this and it was snow and it was ice. I think that the winter is coming was, and this is a, look, I'm going to get torn to bits with this theory.
This is a safe space for now.
In the episode post Long Night when Daenerys goes batshit and King's Landing gets destroyed, I think the winter that they think is the ash that falls, like, you know, when Arya wakes up at the end and it's covered in ash and she sees that white horse. And I think that's the winter that they prophesized about myself.
Yeah. Because she, in season two, when she has that vision in Carth.
Yes, that's right. She sees
the throne room, you think it's covered in snow.
Yeah, it's not.
And you think, God, winter's going to absolutely ravage that place. But it is. Exactly. Yeah. But I think, it's a really tricky one to nail down. But apparently winter is here.
Yeah.
And they had a bit of a joke about that, didn't they? John and Sansa, they were like, oh.
Oh, Dad was Dad's right.
Catchphrase.
Fucking hell, he was always on about that bloody winter. Yeah.
Oh, wish he could see us now, you know, we haven't got any gloves. but yeah, they can't really do anything with it, can they? It's just like... too expensive to have snow for all the time.
And then we head over to Daenerys. Poor Dario gets...
Yeah, we sort of talked about this in an earlier episode, didn't we? That
yeah.
She just says, for reasons that make no sense,
yeah, I'm gonna have to
you're
going to
run
yeah.
the city that I've only been able to hold because I have three dragons.
Yeah. And you're going to now manage this very sensitive political situation, given the fact you're just hard as nails. And
her excuses are so shit as well. She's like, I have to get married, so it's probably better if you don't come. And he's like, kings have loads of lovers.
Yeah.
You could too. She's like, no.
Yeah, no, I'm just not that kind of girl.
I've got a parcel coming in a few weeks. You need to sign for it. It's better if you stay. It's so, like, they just didn't know what to do. Like, the other thing I thought that was really funny, actually, no, she gives Tyrion his badge, officially Hand of the Queen.
See, I got confused. I always thought that was a Lannister emblem, but it's not. It's just the official, universally accepted symbol for the Hand of the Monarch.
Yeah. She said she got it made, and she was like, I don't know if it's right. And it is an exact replica.
It's an exact, wow, great
memory. I kind of thought she would maybe just have something different, like just play around with it a bit, like her own interpretation.
Like a dragon claw. Yeah,
I thought there'd be some kind of fire or, you know...
Something.
It's a bit like on Bake Off.
It was made out of a different material. It was like a pewter rather than a gold.
Yeah, yeah. Or I thought black or something. You know, I thought it... But instead, it was treated as like a technical challenge on Bake Off. Like, we want an exact replica.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought that was quite touching. Yeah. Like, he's in. And I think... You know, we're sort of going to get to the point soon where she starts behaving more irrationally. So I was thinking, no, he's not really aware that she's... He still believes in her, basically, doesn't he, at this point?
Yeah,
he still thinks she's the saviour. And they've got the boats from Theon and Yara. So
loads of boats. Loads of fucking boats.
Before then, though...
Yes.
We go... Which I'm sure you're thrilled about. We go back to Dawn.
Yeah.
So since... Because we haven't seen them and we didn't watch the episode.
I didn't even write notes about that because I was just like, oh, God.
Well, you know, they did get it all out of the way at the start of this season, which we didn't watch. Ellaria killed Doran Martell and all of his guards.
Yeah.
For reasons that make no sense. For reasons that...
Yeah.
She just said, women are in charge now.
Yeah.
Sure.
Great, fine.
So we go over there, and since the explosion at the Sept, the Queen of Thorns, who is very old, has travelled hundreds of miles south.
Quite quickly,
quite quickly. And has learned decided,
of what's gone on.
She's learned of what's gone on, yeah.
Yeah.
Gone all the way down, and she says, look, this is not about... What does she say? This is about revenge. We're not trying to take back anything. We just want to wipe out the Lannisters, basically. Yeah. Right? And then Varys comes out.
Fair enough. I can get down with just straightforward.
You get to a certain age.
Yeah.
You get to a certain age. I wouldn't know this, but you get to a certain age. You just know where you're at, right? You're like, I've got what I need. I don't need money. I've got some clothes. I know what I like. I'm just going to say what I think.
Yeah, precisely. You just become that. You become that woman in the advert, the old woman that just hits the piano keys on the way out the door. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then we see Varys, who's clearly just being paid by the word because he only said three words.
He got fucked over a bit, didn't he, poor Varys?
I just thought, like, why wouldn't he be sitting with them? Isn't he brokering the whole thing? And he just emerges like he's on Stars in the Rise, like, being like, fire and blood. But then. Strange. He's on the boat with Daenerys.
Oh, God. So he was. Listen. How does he get from there to there so fucking quickly?
Some people think that Daenerys has picked up those guys in Dawn and then is now sailing to Dragonstone, which... tenuous.
Or it just wasn't thought of properly.
Call me a cynic.
So. Okay.
Can I tell... I've got one thing I want to say about this final scene.
Do it.
Fleet of boats. Got the dragons. The dragon heads on the front of the ships. Those are new. Amazing. And everyone is just standing like this on the boat, right?
No way. No.
I can't even stand up on the central line without holding something, lest I fall over. And they're just on this, like, what, 8-day voyage? And they're just all, like...
just standing stock still. A dragon swoops over, flapping its, like, 25 metres wide wings. It'd be like...
And you think these rowers are all rowing this? No, there'll be someone...
out of
kilter. You know, three rows back doing a shit job. It'll be choppy, right?
Exactly. And
there's no seats. This is my same problem with the Old Town. Nowhere to sit down.
Yeah.
And they're not. None of them are talking.
Amazing. Yeah.
This is the thing. Right. They'd all be chatting and I'd be going, guys, what are we having for dinner tonight?
Yeah, exactly. It was a good teasing kind of like end scene, I thought was really good.
It was one of my favourite ways to end a season.
Yeah.
So
she's finally getting across water.
I mean,
yeah.
This is the biggest, I think the biggest moment in the show so far.
A couple of things that we haven't, that we've not picked up on. Benjen, we saw Benjen saying goodbye to Bran. What we'd missed was he saved Mira and Bran from something. I've forgotten what. I presume it was just like some whites or something, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the last we see of Benjen. Remind me of the state of Benjen. Why does he look so rough?
I'm glad you asked.
Thank you.
Because I just looked it up. Because I was watching thinking, what on earth is happening? So he actually explains this to Bran and Mira, that he was stabbed by a White Walker's sword.
Yeah.
Which is what they use to turn people into White Walkers.
That's right.
And before it took over, the children kind of started to reverse it with a dragonglass sword.
Right.
Okay. Kind of like the process that we saw on that guy in the against the tree.
Yep.
And that has held off. So he's kind of like quasi...
it's kind of half White Walker-y. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, fine. Yeah.
Something I enjoyed his character. I enjoyed Benjen. We also see Bran's entering his annoying phase now, which is a shame. But we do get the Tower of Joy revelation, which I'm interested to know, to anyone listening, this is a question I want people to kind of let us know about. If you didn't know about R and L equals J, what the fuck did you think was happening in that scene? Because I knew because I'd had it spoiled.
It leaked, didn't it, or something?
Yeah, but there must have been tons of you listening that watched that for the first time, just going, because it didn't explicitly say what was happening. No. You got a hint of like we had that great shot of the baby morphing into John's face as we sat behind the table.
So we know that. John is Lyanna's son by this point, but we don't know anymore. But what she does say is if Robert finds out, he will kill him.
Yeah.
So I guess you're supposed to infer Robert has been wiping out the Targaryens.
Yeah.
Rhaegar kidnapped Lyanna, which is what we've been led to believe.
Yeah.
But seemingly they've had a baby. But yeah, it's a lot. It's interesting because they don't vocalize what happened in that scene until the finale of season 7. And I think it's a little bit of like, I think the showrunners didn't really know whether they were in a position to give such a big thing away. I think they're still hoping a book comes out at some point. And I also think it's like, let's play this for the biggest impact possible.
Yeah.
No, but it's an odd one, isn't it? Cause it's
cause without prior knowledge, what's happening, it has no real impact. You know, it has much more dramatic impact when you know what's going on. It's like, oh my God, I think it was a little bit of service to the book people. I think
it is. And I think also
unless you're a book person, you didn't really know what's going on. You don't need to know that John's a Targaryen at this point. You need to know by the end, you know, the revelation, like you say, at the end of season 7 is important. Yeah.
But well, and also the revelation comes, and therefore the implication that Jon and Daenerys are related comes, it is intercut with them shagging on the boat. Yeah.
So with Tyrion sat outside.
Yeah, just sort of listening like a pervert. Yeah. But yeah, I think to your point, it's like, it doesn't, It's not immediately clear why this is a big deal, but no. There are points in the show. I mean, we see some of that scene in an earlier episode. Bran watches Ned go up the tower and hears someone scream. And I think, again, you're supposed to assume that Lyanna's being murdered.
Right. Okay. Okay.
But, like, again, like, even then, I just think, and there's mention, you know, the pilot, Robert goes to the crypt to pay his respects to Lyanna, and he says, I'll kill every Targaryen. You know, he says something like, I got rid of them, and Ned says, you didn't get rid of them all, and we get to dinners and so on. But, yeah, it's a hard one, because I think one thing that a TV show struggles with is all the stuff that's happened in the past without doing flashbacks, and I think they started doing flashbacks quite late. I think they're quite hard. I even struggle sometimes just with the you know, heavier implications of all of this. Obviously now we know, but at the time you're kind of like,
well, it was a lot to deal with, wasn't it? But I think that's probably because it was quite so imagine, I think for TV people that hadn't read the books or hadn't any prior knowledge, it must have been a bit of like, I don't really get why what's going on. It was very strange, because
it's a shame they didn't have, I mean, it's a bit hackneyed, but like Bran literally going, oh my god, that means that, you know, like, it's
exactly
good,
but that's what I mean. There was no kind of like, I must tell John. There's none of that kind of like, oh my god, you mean he's a Targaryen, he is the one true king, you know, that kind of thing is it was just missing that, you know. May have been a little bit cheesy, but
I don't know. It just doesn't feel like we're quite with the characters, you know. We're kind of going, wait, I think I know what's happening, but you tell me what you think's happening, you know.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
That was season six. Down, thoughts, top done. Line thoughts, good season, bad season, middle season?
I thought it was a great season. I mean, I think I would have really enjoyed it. I would have really enjoyed watching all of it, I think. But time
I would too.
Is not on our side. But I've really enjoyed the ones that we've watched. And I think it's probably peak Game of Thrones this season. Was all those seasons.
Interesting. Although, I think it holds up really well because it's all quite action-packed this season.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we have just seen the big episodes as well. So I don't know how... We've missed out on Jorah. Where is Jorah? Is Jorah still bombing around?
No, he's that's season 7, isn't since, it? But he'll turn up in Alta.
Yeah, exactly. So... That's that done, which means, you know what's coming next, gang. The Twitter vote will be open Thursday or Friday, something like that, where you get to choose which episodes from season 7 we watch. We are into our penultimate season. And let's just have a quick scan through what the episodes were. What do you think?
I think this is going to be really good. I'm really looking forward to this. Cool. Episode 4 is the big fight against the Lannisters, with the dragons.
Ah, yes, with the loot? With almost like the Western
loot train.
Episode.
They've raided Highgarden.
Yeah,
and they don't do very well against Daenerys. But this is the thing where, like, isn't there quite a few things where it's like Jaime falls in the water? And
yeah,
then, like,
it's like a cliffhanger. We're led to kind of think that
she's like, oh, I'll not kill him, I'll just leave him. Like, it's a bit sort of silly.
And what was the weapon, the dragon, the big crossbow, the huge
scorpion
crossbow? That was it, the scorpion. That was it.
It's great set piece. So I think it's all that, pretty good. The only thing I would say, and I think we should cover it, but the Beyond the Wall I think is one of the worst episodes of Game of Thrones.
Which one is that?
The one where they go to catch a white and it's just...
Oh, is this the ice dragon one?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm just one of those viewers. I just think it's cart before the horse. They've thought about the effects first. Everyone behaves in a manner that is really silly.
Oh, poor Viserion's not going to get his moment. Well, you never know.
Well, no, I mean, we might end up getting... People might vote for us.
Oh, I forget, we're into short episodes now. So we're actually going to get... You know, we're going to cover, like, almost half of the season.
Almost half, yeah.
So I think very quickly, as you say, episode 1 is Dragonstone, where Arya kills all of the Freys. We see the Hound again, which I completely forgot. I can't remember the last time we saw the Hound. Last time we saw the Hound, he was on the cliff, wasn't he? After his injury.
Yeah.
Daenerys arrives at Dragonstone. Episode 2, Stormborn. More Daenerys kind of like... plotting and planning and getting the been to IKEA, got some furniture in for Dragonstone. And it ends with Theon. Oh, it's when your man Greyjoy attacks the boat, and Theon has a coward. He like doesn't save Yara and leaps off and coward and jumps overboard. John arrives at Dragonstone in episode 3, Queens of Justice, and
that's a great episode.
And Elena bites the bullet, tells Cersei it was me.
So good.
Like you say, 4 Spoils of War, very, very good episode. Like a Western, like Back to the Future Part 3. Number 5 is Eastwatch. Hey.
Fantastic.
That is Daenerys offering Lannister soldiers mercy. The Citadel, Sam leaves the Citadel, taking several restricted books with him. And at the end, that's where, yeah, you're right, they head off to, we're going to go capture ourselves a Wight. This will show them. Season 6, possibly the greatest episode of Game of Thrones ever made, where they resurrect Viserys. Not trying to swing.
You're such a troll.
Which is a bit like Jason the Argonauts a little bit. And then 7, The Dragon and the Wolf, which is where...
a big meeting at the Dragon Pit between like 30 cast members, except Bronn, because he can't be in a scene.
I'm just gonna go out here, wait out here, and it ends with a lovely bit of incest. Lovely bit of incest.
It's a good season.
It is a good season,
apart from episode 6.
Well, maybe,
but I don't mind watching it. Just cool. That person that emailed in the other week saying, "Oh, stop pissing all over it." I'm like, might want to skip this episode, friends.
But there we go. Really enjoyed that season. Cannot wait to get stuck into this one. Let's check our correspondent, shall we? Let's have a look and see who's been in touch. Loving, I know we keep saying this every week, loads of people getting in touch. I love it. I've never had so much interaction on the podcast before. I bloody love it. Thank you so, so much. Well, I'm trying to set up a WhatsApp number so people can leave voice notes. I'm going to aim to get that done by next week.
That's fancy.
Yeah, I know. Amanda Ransom. Hey, Amanda. Thank you very much, Amanda, for getting in touch. Hey, Jamie and Chris, loving the podcast. And yes, go to Belfast. There are quite a few people getting in touch about the Belfast tour. The Game of Thrones tour. We were kind of like talking about that a bit, about the props and stuff. It is open. Amanda went with her husband plus a friend. Don't think like that. They went in October last year. It's just amazing and a must for any Game of Thrones fans. Rubbish memory I have, so I hope I've got all the following all right. But we went by bus from Belfast City Centre, if anyone's planning their itinerary today, to the Linen Mill Studio in Banbridge. And your ticket gives you 4 hours inside. You can't park at the studio itself. There we go. Wow, and it sent some photos in, and they do look very good. They do look very good. Lots of costumes. Maybe if the tourist board at Northern Ireland, if Moira is listening, I don't know if she listens. Belfast are pretty good about organising stuff like this. We could record an episode from there. We could do an episode of Dragoncast from the tour.
Might be lost on people in a purely audio format, so we'd have to make sure there was lots of ASMR elements.
We'd film it.
Do you think we could just... just be standing in a tray of gravel going, "Oh, we are here." Knock, knock. We're at Winterfell.
Abby Messiah. What a great name, Abby Messiah. His email, dragoncast@daftdoris.com. Hi, Jamie and Chris. Really enjoying the podcast. Love all the bonus content on The Last of Us, The Owen Succession. I appreciate the time you put in every week to put this all together. Oh, that's a pleasure, Abby. I like the official HBO podcasts, but I prefer yours. Oh, stop. Stop. It's good to get a different perspective and honest critique. I'll stop you. As an audience, we tend to hold shows like Game of Thrones up on a pedestal and people get very defensive of any criticism. But I like challenging the show and pointing out that everything is not as good as we remember, while rightly praising other aspects that are as good or even better. Question for us. It's an interesting one. How did the two of us meet? When you see each other in real life, is it hard to talk about anything other than what's on the telly?
Well, the answer to that is no.
No, we just
do. We talk about everything. We do.
How the hell did we meet? I think Peter Robinson is responsible for this meeting, almost certainly.
Well, yeah, just
did you
through
write
work,
for Pop Justice?
I did write for Pop Justice, yeah. That was how I sort of got my... breakthrough, but I was sort of toiling away as an intern at various places, not getting anywhere, and Peter and I connected, and I started writing for him, and that really helped, because Pop Justice was a sort of incubator for talent in that sort of space.
And I think that was when I was in, had shared an office with Peter. And I think
yes, you two were thick as thieves.
Chris Mandel, aka Mando,
that's
known.
What Peter calls me. But we must have known each other 8 or 9 years. I would guess.
Yeah, I think so. And then when I was putting together last year's Succession podcast, I thought, I know just the man. No, actually, you came on, didn't you? We talk about a Watchmen.
We did the final season of Thrones. You did a podcast for that.
I did, that's right.
With Elio and Linda.
That's right. And then you came on and talked about Watchmen.
Didn't do Watchmen.
Have you done Watchmen?
No.
Oh my God, we might have found the one to watch. But yeah, when I was putting together Succession one last year, I was like, who am I going to call? I'm going to call fucking Mando.
We did a Netflix one in the pandemic. Do you remember, with James Acaster? We did
a
food episode.
I was thinking about that yesterday, actually. I was like,
I went through our DMs to find the first message. So we've been in touch since 2012.
Wow, 11 years.
And I was trying to help you get some free clothes from Acne.
Yay! That's almost certainly, me on the blag.
So if people want to know our relationship, it's sort of very rooted in that.
I would have been, 2012, that would have been the first series I did, a Thronecast probably, or maybe even Big Brother.
I sent you a follow-up. I did hear from Acne today, but they said quite bluntly, they don't like giving people free things.
Fair enough.
I also sent you several messages asking for work when you were at Holy Moly.
You didn't want to work for Holy Moly, it would have dragged you down.
Well, did you not know that I briefly did?
Did you?
You don't know, I haven't told many people this story, but about 2014.
Did I make you write some? Oh no, that was after I
wasn't. It was after you left. It was after you left. So I went and interviewed. I got offered the job as the new editor.
Did you? Of Holy Moly?
Yeah.
Of Holy Moly. I had no idea.
I didn't put it anywhere, because what happened was they brought me in and they were like, we're just going to do like put you on a fixed term thing until we sort of sort it all out. And the staff that worked there, who I won't name, were awful to me, and it was so awkward.
Oh, no.
And I think I did 3 days, and I said to one of the guys that was like the, you know, directors, I was like, this is not working.
We need to take this off podcast.
Yeah, we do. I can't believe I haven't told you this.
I know exactly who you're talking about. So okay.
So which how much of that is going to make it on the edit?
I can leave that in.
The short version is I did about 3 days there and then left.
There we go. A little glimpse into there. We will take this discussion off pod. Thanks, Abby. That's how we met. Beth.
I got more than she bargained for there.
Beth got in touch again, just saying, loves the podcast. Oh, stop. Really enjoying OA rewatches as well. I got so excited by your theory that the OA getting cancelled was part of their plan and it might be back someday. I think your plan to cover all of season 8 with 2 per podcast is a good idea. I haven't gone back to that season at all, so it'd be nice to hear your thoughts on it. As a possible extra show after Succession, Game of Thrones and the OA, could The Witcher be a contender? I think the third series is out, due out again this year. Thanks again for all your hard work. Maybe. I know people are quite passionate about The Witcher. I'm not a big Henry Cavill fan, I have to say, and I feel as though it's a bit of a vehicle, or it was. But I don't know. Let us know what you think.
I'm not convinced, personally.
Okay. Jean Manalang. We've got some great names. Manalang, Messiah, Makaruk. Fantastic. Jean says... I've recently been to the Game of Thrones studio in Belfast. It's exactly like the Harry Potter one. I've got 3 pinned reels in my Instagram all about it. So if you go and search for Gene Manilang, you can
cheeky plug there.
It's amazing. A lot of props there, an amazing set's built. I booked a Belfast trip just to see that and had a Game of Thrones themed holiday. It is great, Belfast, because it's you can in a day you can do like most of the main kind of like places. It's so good. And Drencast is part of her weekly routine. Thanks, Jean. Another one. This is so embarrassing. James John. Good name, James John. Just want to drop an email saying I'm really enjoying the pods. Lots of work going on. Lots going on in work at the moment. He's a teacher. And they really give me something to look forward to on the commute. Looking forward to the succession one for the final season. Oh, thanks, James. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Well, thanks for your service. I'm going to say, I always say that to teachers like Americans do whenever they encounter a soldier. Thanks for your service.
Thank you for doing your duty.
Yeah. Stephen Connor, with our final one. Good morning, Dragoncast. This is by far my favourite podcast. Oh, starve. Often laughing out loud at work with my headphones in. Jolly good. Also love Game of Thrones. Watched it back multiple times, slightly obsessive. I was scouring the internet to find out how Littlefinger made it back to the battle. This is in reference to our questioning about how on earth the Knights of the Vale made it to the Battle of the Bastards. And he says, this seems like the most plausible explanation to me. Apparently Baelish moves around not by a teleportation. Oh, it's a joke. Apparently Baelish moves around not by a teleportation device, but he can open portals that can be used to transport an army 1,000 kilometres plus within half a day. Keep up the great work and keep annoying some of the listeners with your witty remarks. Possibly my famous moment was when one of our dear readers from our friends across the pond got upset with us. They did get upset with us. That was any newcomers, that was when we quite rightly pointed out that Game of Thrones is probably a British show. Rather than,
I got a funny email the other day from a PR agency that was like, Game of Thrones voted the best British show. And I was tempted to email and say, what are the metrics for judging this?
Yeah,
but I just thought, no, it's just not worth it, is it? I'm gonna get in trouble.
There we go. Thank you very much, Steve. Thanks to everyone that takes the time to write in. It really does give us a bit of a pep in our step, and we do appreciate it. Right, we're going to head off. We've done an hour, and we've got a lot more to come. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4. We've got 7 more episodes of Game of Thrones rewatch left. Exciting times! So get your votes in at the end of the week. Hope you've enjoyed it. Until then, Dracarys. You have to say it.
Oh, sorry, Dracarys.
If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter @DragonCast_pod or email DragonCast@daftdoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for DragonCast Janie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside, is very much appreciated. DragonCast is hosted by me, Janie East, along with Chris Mandel, and is a Daft Doris production. Dracarys.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.